Hello, Mech Warriors, and welcome to the Mech Bay, where we fix your mech and fix your game.
What's going on, Mech Warriors? I'm your host, Josh. I've got my co-host, Loremaster Denim, in the hot seat, and I've got Paint Bay Dustin with me today. What's going on, gentlemen?
Howdy, howdy.
How's it going?
And we are the Mech Bay Podcast, your number one source for all things casual competitive battle tech. And today, we are talking about our local tournament that Dustin ran as a local ambassador and Denim TO'd as the local catalyst rep, and I played in as the local hotshot wannabe underdog.
Hold on, I was there. I was not there as an official catalyst person. But yeah, I mean, I know the rules, so I volunteered to help out with the whole lore master role.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit here. But Josh, you want to line us up for some news, hobby progress, games played?
First, I was going to say, so today you're going to get all three perspectives of a tournament, playing in it, running it, and answering all the dumb questions from it.
Yes.
Denim's smiling real hard on that one. You can't see in this audio-only format, but he's like, yeah, yeah, some of y'all don't know how to roll dice. They got six sides, people. Six sides. But yeah, so let's kick off with some hobby news, hobby progress, and some games played. So first off, for hobby news, it's been a slow week / month because Catalyst was at Gen Con.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're busy.
Oh, yeah. They're at Gen Con. They're going to have a presence at Dragon Con. I think they're going to be at Nova. They're setting up all kinds of stuff. They are very, very busy this summer.
It's good. Good. It is here.
But as of right now, there's like no new product, essentially. There's no new announcements for anything.
Well, they did extend the Kickstarter pledge thingy until past August now. So it was going to close August 31st, and now they're like, it will close sometime after that.
Hey, that's pretty good.
Well, it's because you can change stuff now. Like, you can actually go into your set items that you couldn't change. Like, you'd only change the add-ons, and now you can actually go in and change your major selections. So if you decided, I didn't want to have this as my free or my included badge, you could swap it out for something else.
Interesting.
Yeah. Great. My decision paralysis now will kick in and I will be like, oh, did I actually want that, you know, Bane and Kraken box?
Why would you let me do this, Catalyst? But other than that, pretty quiet. And the
which is actually good, because I don't want to say they've got a lot of stuff that they should start preparing to box up and deliver to us, but
they got a lot of stuff.
They're not delivering anything until after the Kickstarter is closed. So
I know. Yep. So close it already so you can get on finishing it. The longer it's open, the longer I have to wait.
That's true.
So yeah, so in BattleTech news, but not Catalyst news, we did get our hands on the new Gale Force 9 Hextech Thunderhead Studio terrain.
Right, not just the buildings. Yep, the buildings have been out for a few weeks now, but we actually got our hands on the new road systems and the expansion that goes with that, and their very first hills section. It's just a small sampling of the hills. So these are the ones that come on the Grassland 2 map that comes in the Game of Armored Combat box set. But it shows what they're going to be like. And they're really, really nice. They have they're dense and heavy, like a pound-ish each. Mm-hmm. Just like the buildings, they're made of that same sandstone-y type cast material.
Oh, they are resin cast, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, these are too heavy to be prints. Okay.
Cool. Oh, they're not prints. Yeah. And because they're heavy, they do have that felt on the bottom, so they don't mark up or rip up any maps that you've got. It's really, really nice.
Nice.
They are this brownish green color that goes well with both the desert and the grassland maps. And they've got kind of a lighter dry brush on them to bring out the details. But, they're of that material that you can prime them and paint them whatever you want if you don't like that. But as far as just opening them up and pulling them out, we threw them down on a table to play a game. And they look great. They looked really, really great, especially next to the buildings that are already there. And the roads are that thick, like indestructible rubber that you can bend that all of Gale Force 9's roads. So if you've ever used any of Gale Force 9's other products, it's the same material that they make the Hextech roads out of.
Nice.
Yeah. But all in all, I would say if you don't have a 3D printer, that you aren't already printing your own terrain. To get someone else to print a building for you, which doesn't have any paint on it, that you're going to have to clean up and paint yourself, it's about the same amount of money. And you get two buildings in a box for the Gale Force 9 stuff. So, you know, it's just like, do I have time or do I have a little bit extra money?
Yes, it's the classic conundrum. If you, if you're flush with time, you can make your own stuff. And if you're not, you can buy it.
That's right.
No. This is, as someone who literally hates terrain, I just hate terrain as a concept. Touching these and like playing with these felt so good because I was like, it's done. It's not like flimsy. There's no print lines, first of all. So it doesn't look like, oh,
yeah, thanks. They cleaned up their masters. Yeah.
Jim Bob in his garage ran these and he, you know, sold it to me at 100% like markup for his, you know, spool. No, this is resin cast. So it's like actual, like good terrain. It's pre-painted and it's not like so rigid that it can't like take it up. Actual usage. No, the roads were flexible. And I was like, you know what? This is like one of those few terrains I'm actually happy to use. Like use, not just like look at.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, that's my terrain box that I never take out. No, this is like, hey, I've got roads that are 3D and they have the
little lines. Yeah.
The divider lines are A, raised, B, painted, and C, flexible enough that it's not like getting paint ripped off all the time. So I was like, no. This is actually designed to be used and look good.
Even the roads have like three different colors painted on there, three or four different colors. And the buildings have, they've got a lot of colors. And they come in two different color schemes, but you get one of each in the box. But yeah, like it's not just a little bit of paint. It's, they look good.
All right. Is that it for Newsy News? Oh, I can't say Newsy News. That's got to be trademarked by somebody. We can't be Newsy News people.
Sir, there's a bunch of 1920s, Brooklyn news kids that deliver the papers coming to beat you up in a musical form. I'm pretty sure that I'm shaking his head. Possibly.
I was just thinking of actual newspaper. Like when's the last time I picked up an actual newspaper?
Somebody doesn't read the funnies anymore. Anyways, it's hobby progress time. I feel like I'm going to be the one with the most hobby progress here.
I think you are.
Yeah.
Classic Josh tournament paint crunch.
First, we got to get out. Why does Josh like tournaments? Not for winning, not for trophies. It's because he gets stuff painted and it's painted well. And his stress, like he doesn't remember the last 5 days before the tournament. So anything that gets painted during that time is great. It's free. Some other
it's magical. That.
It's magical. It just showed up painted.
I think we've expired free real estate. We used it too much.
Have you? It's literally a free space on the McBay bingo card. It's
free. That's free real estate. Well, there you go. There's free space.
But yeah, I painted up my Legacy. I assembled and painted up my Greyhound.
Nice.
I painted my second Exterminator. I don't even know how I got that second Exterminator. That's the best part. And I painted up my Night Sky from the, I want to say, not Kellhounds pack, but Hansen Rough Riders pack. That sounds right. Nobody's correcting me. I'm going to go with Hansen Rough Riders.
You're on your own, bud.
But yeah, so those all look great. I did some crazy freehands, and I'm realizing that I've hit my skill limit with the brush size that I'm using because it's gone full fish hook. And the problem is I can't literally like write out the Declaration of Independence on a mech's paneling with a brush that's the size of the panel itself.
Right.
No. Got to have a good point.
Yeah. So I think the big takeaways is I got the Greyhound like perfectly airbrushed gradient from black to white. The key was I didn't like pin wash it, like putting the darkest black in the panels. I just like super diluted non-oil. Like literally this was like a 5-to-1 or like almost a 10-to-1 ratio of non-oil to medium. And it was like the perfect amount of shadow. And I was just so happy that I couldn't even freehand it on it. Like I had achieved pure shadow. Like actual shadows on a unit, and I was like, oh,
like putting a decal on it would have just popped it out saying, look, that's a decal, because like that the shadows are too nice for the decal to even blend
exactly.
in
exactly like anything yeah. else I added to it would have made it look worse, and I was like, oh god, I hate this part. But I was extremely pleased considering it's been, oh man, 10 months since I got it, so I've now assembled it and painted it. Like give me another year and I'll add some like free hands or something.
There you go. Hey, at least you can bring it to Southern Assault if you wanted to. Or can we? Nope. No, we can't. It's not legal. I thought you were going to. Somebody's Bobby, let us bring the Greyhound.
Thanks. But yeah, I actually also tried sponge weathering for the Night Sky for the first time. Like I don't do a lot of like heavy weathering. Like I might do like some more washing on the legs, but I actually like took a piece of sponge, dipped it in like a brown black mixture, and then put it on the miniature and like pulled it a little bit, and then did the highlights on the low side of the like the marks.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, my melee mech, of course, needs to be more highlighted on with debris and stuff.
Especially on that hatchet arm, you've got to have some divots in there.
Oh yeah, but yeah. So I didn't paint anything else. I will admit this, like on air for recording, that my wife assembled all of my terrain that I got from Adepticon. Like this is like skirmish grade terrain, like the Tinker House, like pre-painted paperboard terrain. And I was like, for that stuff, I just want to like fold it away and just pull it out. And I'm like, I was like, it's literally been sitting there since Adepticon. And I was like, literally for my birthday, I was like, hun, do you know what I really want for my birthday? My pre-painted paper terrain to be assembled. And she was like, you played in your tournament, I will assemble your terrain. I didn't assemble it, my wife did.
Nice.
And okay. I'm man enough to admit that. But that's all for my hobby progress.
I was mostly busy preparing for the tournament, but I did squeeze in a little brush time on a Ariadna Scout for Infinity. So just a little bit of that.
Last time it was Warhammer. This time it's Infinity. What's next? Drop Fleet Commander, Dustin?
Gaslands.
Yeah, I have also... Anyways, a Southern Assault is...
No, we're distracting you on purpose. Like, what's your next mistress of the evening, sir?
It's true. Oh, a new war game? Minis? Sure, I'll paint it and never play it. Great.
Ooh-wee, I love not committing to one war game.
I've been trying to stick to... I got to keep my focus on at least a couple, so I'm going to try to stick to Infinity 40K and Battletech, but...
Dustin's playing the field. You heard it here, everyone.
That's right.
Denim, did you get anything? I'll accept priming, painting, buying even? Buying is...
Yeah, I spent many, many evenings this past week validating and verifying lists for Dustin's tournament.
Thank you so much.
I channeled my campaign organization skills and printed stuff, got a bunch of clipboards, got pencils for everyone, made sure that nobody wanted for anything. So yeah, all of my hobby progress went into prepping for the tournament.
Those clipboards were clutch. They saved the day. That would have been a nightmare without the clipboards.
It would have.
And I brought my own clipboard. I was so mad. I was like, there's a second clipboard I got to keep track of now. God, amateurs. But I appreciate the clipboards.
No, it's a great idea.
All right. So that's it for hobby progress. Did anyone get any games played outside of the tournament? And
I used that Gale Force 9 stuff, and we did a 4v4 with all of that. And that I wanted to show people that you can play a Lance on Lance in under 2 hours, and we got it done in under an hour and a half.
Yeah. It can be done, people.
It was done easily too, but me and Brian, we both have all their tables memorized, and it's not like we didn't chat at all, but we kept the out of game chatting to a minimum, and we did our initiative rolls at a good pace. It was very, very easily done. 7,500 BV in under an hour and a half in a nice, relaxed pace. We weren't like pushing super hard. It's nice playing with someone who really knows what they're doing well enough to do that.
It's so nice. If you have the means, I highly recommend it. It is so choice.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I get like anxious when anyone takes like more than 33 seconds to like calculate it, to hit number, do the roll, and then apply the damage, but like,
30 seconds is a long time.
That's
exactly. That's the thing. It's a long time. And my brain's like
pause the video or pause the podcast right now and count to 30. Watch your watch go to 30, not like 1, 2, 3, 4. Like count 30 seconds. It's a long time.
It's forever in Battletech time.
It is.
But yeah, so I got a game in against a newer player. I want to say his name was Thomas. And this was like the week before the tournament. So I literally had my rough tournament list and I got to fight against his king crab, his mongoose, his griffin, and his thunderbolt. And these were all like intro-tech versions. And I took my Greyhound, my Legacy, and my Gurkha. And I got my butt kicked.
Was it just over-tonnaged against you?
I think
you had the tech advantage for that.
So I didn't link up the C3I for the Legacy and the Gurkha, and I downgraded my skills to all B4 fives for everyone. And I think it was just the 4-3 like numbers advantage. Like if he won initiative, he got to move two last, and I think that was just like so overpowering that like I could only react with one unit really.
Mm-hmm.
But he played a great game. I will say, I was like, oh man, I hit your gyro and your griffin, and like somebody comes around the corner and is like, hey, you should use careful stand. And I'm like, that's an optional rule. You keep walking, sir. And he was like, oh, come on, let him use it. And I was like, this was just by the book intro game.
Yep.
And he's like, okay, careful stand, what's that? And I'm like, fine, roll it. And of course his gyroed griffin stands back up, and I had already like moved units away from that, so then I have to move my units back to it to try to finish it off. And I'm like,
oh, you're just too nice, Josh. You're just the kindest, nicest person to play against.
I know. So I totally wasn't a dick to play during this. I totally not at all. But I think we definitely went through as this person yelled like, oh, you should use this option rule. It's like, we are not using floating crits for an intro game. We do not need to know what broken hip actuators do today. But yeah, so the only sheets I had were for those like four mechs, and I was like, fine, I'll take it. But I won't use C3I, but I don't really have anything like more intro.
I love how he says three mechs and then only has sheets for four. We don't know what the fourth mech is.
The fourth mech was supposed to be, I'm trying to think, the Toyama.
Yeah. I like the Toyama.
I know you like the Toyama. And I was like, ooh. I was prepared for 7,500. He called out 5,000. I was like, yeah, I'll meet you. Mm-hmm. What I should have done was like, hey, up your skills to 3-4, and then we can both have a good game.
That would have been better.
Exactly. Exactly. But he was new. I think he had fun. I think it was like his third game. I think you had actually played him the week before, Denim.
Yep, I did. I did. And I played him again the week after.
Okay, so I did not scare him away from Battletech. That's all that I'm taking away from this.
He definitely came back.
Because his stuff was already painted. So I was like, I literally came in and I was like, oh, this is like advanced game. Like, you're fine. And I was like, cool, I got this. And he's like, want to do 5K? And I was like, sure. I was like, okay. And he was like, oh, it's only like my second game. And I was like, wait, what? your stuff's when he fully came back, painted. Like, no, you don't get to say that.
When he came back, he was sitting there, and I'm like, hey, are you playing anyone? He's like, nope. I'm like, do you have a 7,500? And he's like, yes, I do. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, aggressively. Like, I've got one now.
Yeah, boy. But no, that was a good game.
How about you, Dustin? Any games?
I probably played one game of Infinity.
Of Battletech.
Of Battletech? Did I play a game of Battletech?
I don't know.
Did you play Battletech anymore? So. When was the last time you played Battletech?
I did play Noah. Like a month
I like how ago? You were like, I played, and there's a 40-second pause where I stopped this podcast and edited it, a break to be cut out, and you like ran through every name of everyone you know.
Yeah, I did play a playtest of next year's, hopefully, tournament mission, and I did, okay, I played my brother after the tournament. He's hanging out here. Those with sharp ears will hear his dog in the background during this recording tonight. But yeah, I played him today. So I got that game played. I played one ringer game. We'll talk about that maybe during the tournament. And I think that's it. Battletech wise, since we've last recorded,
it's more than zero.
Yep. So yeah, playtesting. It takes like a year to write a new set of missions. It would take me less time if I could get more games in more frequently, but
it would. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the, you guys know how it is.
I do know how it is as an adult with responsibilities. Speaking of, we do have a whole bunch of upcoming events. We've got Southern Assault 3 coming up, and those slots are all booked up.
That happened in like, people are like, there were 80 slots. It was over in like 2 weeks. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the hippest thing on the East Coast.
It's like Battletech is popular or something. I don't understand.
Guess who didn't get in?
I don't have to guess. Wait, did you not get in?
Oh, Josh? I got in. I got in.
Okay.
Dustin got in.
I got
in. No, well, then I guess that leaves me.
Yeah.
No, right during signups, my son broke his arm and I was very busy with that. And I'm like, oh, but there's 80 something slots. It's not going to be a problem at all. It was a problem.
It's not a problem. It was a problem. And I literally messaged everyone that day. I was like, so this whole sign up shoot is open. Go now.
Let's go.
I will sign. And you know what? I was like, I'm better than signing all of my friends up for things that they're not committing to like instantly.
Yeah, I was sitting in the emergency room when that text came in and I'm like, I just looked at it and like, uh-huh. Yep. That's it. That's a tomorrow problem.
Tomorrow problem, not available. Thanks. Have a nice day. Yeah. Take a quick break and then we'll get into our main subject of the tournament. Three perspectives, playing, running, answering the questions.
Grillers Gone Wild is proud to announce their newest partnership with the Lyran Commonwealth Tech Division to bring you the new ER Flammenwerfer. Now, with the hottest plasma torch containment technology and new miniaturized nozzles, you can verf flammens on all those pesky infantry blobs to your heart's content. So come on down to see the hottest commercial grills to the most combat-effective war crime weapons on the battlefield. Whether you're cooking turkeys with the techs or rogue steam falcons on the field, Grillers Gone Wild has all the tech to make you sweat.
All right, we are back. Dustin decided that he would retake his mantle of running the Triangle Battletech tournaments, which this would be the third one he's done.
Yep. Yeah.
And he would elicit the help of Denim as the...
I volunteered. He didn't even ask.
Oh, wow. Okay. I see. I see how this is now.
Let me see if you're...
I'll tell you what I remember.
I remember maybe just chit-chatting about the details of the tournament. And you're like, no, there should be elementals this year. And I was like, yeah, I'm really weak on rules with elementals. And you're like, no, but there should be elementals. You could just allow just the regular stock elementals, the like MG, laser, and flamer elementals or whatever. And I'm like, only if you're judge and you answer the questions. And you're like, I was like, you can't play. And you're like, ah. And you're like, yeah, I don't need to win the tournament. I'll do it. And then, so that's how you volunteered yourself.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Is that conversation seems familiar. So I'm not going to say that's not how it went. That does seem familiar, but in my head, that was me volunteering because you threw it out there and I pounced on it. Cause I could have said no. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who recommended the elementals. And I believe that it was something like, oh, that would be a lot of hassle to verify all the lists and stuff. And I'm like, I'll verify the lists. And you're like, but then you wouldn't play. And I'm like, I'm okay with that. Who needs to win another tournament?
So it's roughly close. Yeah, that's kind of how it went down.
And I didn't know about any of this because I'm just over here trying to get a podcast together, edited, and sent out every other week for, you know, thousands of listeners.
You do this conversation in less than 24 hours.
Yes, it was very quick.
Yeah. But by then, I was already angry.
If it had been 5 minutes, you would have been angry. Don't try and fool us.
Okay, you're not wrong, but angry. Like,
you don't come out to our Saturday dinners that we have. You choose not to hang out with us when we go to the bar or go bowling. That time, you know, our biweekly Mech Bay bowling. That Dustin and I do. You don't go to any of that.
Can't even tell if we're joking now at that point.
Denim's definitely joking.
I hope so. He better be.
Dustin has to say that or else I'll be in trouble.
get your bowling shirt out of frame.
We changed.
Is that what you call it? Is it a?
It is a bowling shirt. It 100% shirt. Is. Okay. Yeah.
It's like, bro, I don't know what those things are called.
You've never bowled in a league before? I'm so disappointed in you, Dustin.
No.
No. Only true mech warriors bowl in leagues.
I was part of a league.
What was the name of your league, Denim?
Oh, it was like something to do with my school mascot, and I can't remember exactly what the name was. It was so dumb, but I had a horse on it.
I like roll in, and I'm like, if I break three digits, I'm happy tonight. That's the kind of bowler I am.
The year was 2000, and I want to say. 2000? Let's just go with the year was 2000. And me and my boys were the Pokemon Monsters because the person running the bowling league didn't know what Pokemon were, so he wrote Pokemon. They didn't know what masters were, so he wrote monsters. And we were just like, you know what? Good enough.
This is great. This is even better.
So that is burned into like core memory for me. It's like,
yes.
When I was in my bowling league, Pokemon didn't exist yet.
Anyways. All right. So yeah. So because of this, we got this weird, you ran it. You were the mastermind of all the rules questions. Like you were the man, the battlefield reporter, Denim. And I was,
you were in the trench.
I was in the trench fighting for my life because no one was like, Josh, do you want to be a part of this? And you were like, well, if you wanted me to be a part of it, you should have asked me minute one. Sorry.
There was no doubt that Dustin was going to be running one this year. He's run one. This is his third one.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
It's the annual tournament.
You had a year.
I just needed outlined that this was not a Mech Bay podcast tournament.
No, this is Triangle Battle Pack.
This was the local scene.
I don't think Mech Bay even sponsored this.
Mech Bay did not sponsor it because if it sponsored it, it couldn't have played in it. Yep. Which is, it sounds worse when you do that. It's like, why didn't you help out for this? Like, because I wanted to play in it.
Yeah. Well, I knew you were gonna.
If there was any coercion or quid pro quo, like I would be like in court right now. But no,
I knew that you weren't gonna want to abstain from the tournament by being in running or any administrative part of it until you had that trophy on your shelf.
and I had to be lore master because if we came in first and second, it would look bad.
It would look real bad. One of us can win it, the other one, but two is too much. Yeah. So I got to play, you got to run, and you got to officiate essentially. Yep. So we're going to get some weird like commentary for this one.
Yeah, we're going to get you're going to get the whole thing top to bottom. If you want to know about the tournament, you're going to know about it.
All right. So where do we start?
Yeah, let's start with Dustin. You released the mission packet like roughly day one.
Yes. This was not a secret mission situation. I don't know. I just don't like, my reason for releasing mission packets ahead of time is so that people can read them ahead of time and not have to waste time reading the mission packet. I don't know if that matters.
Dude, it was super helpful. As lore master, as the one who officiated, being able to go through them, play them beforehand. Oh. I mean, we ended up like making sure that some maps weren't even available because some of your missions did not react well to those at all. Mm-hmm. And then any of the weird edge cases that came up, I was able to see those beforehand and talk to you about how we were going to handle that. We changed a couple of the rules because of that.
Yeah.
And you know, all in all, it went a lot smoother because when somebody raised their hand and they're like, hey, how do I, and I'm like, oh, I know what you're talking about. It's this, you're going to treat it like this. Went super, super easy. Buildings don't have legs. Yep. We got all that stuff out way ahead of time.
Buildings do not have legs. I also like the idea of people being able to spar, you know, if you're really serious about wanting to be, you know, cause this is an environment for you to play Battletech competitively. And if you want to be serious about it and kind of get those reps in, you can. I want you to have the missions. I want you to have a month or two at least to practice to get those out. So yeah.
Wait.
Mission packet was on announcement.
People got practice in? What? Yeah. No.
I'm happy you did that.
What a bunch of tryhards, you know, playing the missions a month before. I totally didn't do that at all. No. No, it was great to see the missions ahead of time because like, A, it was a one-day tournament, so there were only three games.
Yes.
So being able to see, like, hey, I need to build a list for these three games. And
there's no way you could build a list that was great at all three of them. So it was fun to watch people go back and forth as to, well, you know, I want to do this, but I'll have to take this out there because it's horrible at that, and I wanted to at least be okay at this, but really good at that. It was a lot of fun watching them.
Oh,
watching
okay.
Them do that.
I'm really happy to hear that because I was very intentional with my missions to try to make sure, you know, the armor, speed, firepower triangle was well represented in the different missions. So,
unfortunately, my two best friends were a part of the tournament, so I couldn't bounce list ideas off of them and get anything back. Like, no feedback was received. That was the worst part.
Yeah.
I was like,
I couldn't. I'd feel bad if I did that.
Like, I literally was like, guys, what do you think of this? And you're like, I think it's a list. And I was like, I will literally come to your house and burn your lawn.
There's a room full of people that they gather at Hangar 18 every Tuesday that you can ask about that, because that's what they're talking about. I can't do it because I know what lists they have. I can't do it.
You're not the only one cursed with knowledge, Stark. But yeah, so it was great to like see that so I could like go through what I had, what I wanted to buy for this kind of stuff like that. So it was great to like not worry about, oh, is this the perfect list for a mission that doesn't exist or could exist or anything like that? It was like, oh, no, I just have to plan for these three missions and that's it. So, Dustin, how did you arrive on these three missions? So you had three missions. You had essentially three objectives and one disappears.
Yep.
You had
stolen straight from 40K.
It's almost like you had been playing that like the month before.
I'm a parrot. I iterate. None of my ideas are original. Let it be said.
I was going to say, you know, parrots are like the smoothest brains of all avians. you had the, like I said, three objectives. One disappears. Mm-hmm. You had the go to the enemy's deployment zone, grab an objective, bring it back.
Yep. Fetch the MacGuffin.
It's the capture the flag. Capture the flag. Capture the enemy flag. So it's Blood Gulch style. Capture the flag.
Yeah. Yes.
And the third one was destroy the opponent's objectives and keep yours alive.
Yep. Yes.
And yeah, there was no just straight killy mission, which I appreciated personally.
I have played many, many meeting engagements, and I will play more with new players. But if you've played more than three games of Battletech, I do not want to play a meeting engagement with you.
What?
I'd never want to. Yeah, I've played so many meeting engagements. I just like mission. I want to play a quick game of Battletech that has a succinct and decisive end after a relaxed game at the local game store. You know, it's going to take
this man getting relaxed games then.
Missions make that happen. So yeah, no meeting engagement. I think it's more interesting when there's more missions. So yeah. And it's, there was a little bit of iteration, but it's mostly the same mission packet from the prior year. My main thinking behind the three objectives was, you know, King of the Hill favors big, thick boys. Capture the flag is for all your slippery mechs, and blowing up the buildings is for the big guns. AC-20s on buildings do lots of damage, and it's easy to hit when they're -4. So I really wanted to reward every playstyle. If you really wanted to lean into something and play a slant list, you could, and you could score really well in one of my missions.
But what was the era that we picked for the mechs? Because that's kind of important for the whole Battletech community to know, you know, what kind of units were they using.
There was no era, so it was era and faction unlocked, so to speak. And if you wanted to bring all intro tech, you could do that. If you wanted to bring all ill clan mechs, you could do that. As long as you're sticking to 7,500 battle value and your mechs were only equipping equipment that could be found inside of the battle mech manual, which I don't know if I'll be able to do that again next year. It's really hard to telegraph that to players.
Right. That was actually a difficult thing with the verification, just because of the questions. A lot of people thought that meant no experimental tech. And I'm like, it doesn't matter what it's listed as. I don't care what the label is, because the label changes over the years. Yep. It's just, is it in the Battle Mech manual? And then the next thing I got is, well, I don't have that book. Well,
so I ended up copying the table pages from the Battle Mech manual PDF and pinning that. And, you know, but not everybody's going to find that. So that was a little bit of a kink. In my perfect world, the powers that be would create a new standard, a new thing you could click on Mega Mech Lab that says sort by Battle Mech Manual Legal. I think almost I maybe like even asked somebody
about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got a no use Total Warfare kind of answer. And I'm like, you know what? I understand that. So,
well, because that's the other problem was it like the few mechs that had APODs as their standard, you know, like the Loki Prime has APODs. Mm-hmm. APODs aren't in the Battle Mech manual. Now they do nothing in our games because they only affect conventional infantry. They do 0 points of damage to anything else. They don't explode if you hit them. Like they literally are, they might as well be roll again crit slots, but they don't exist in the Battle Mech manual. So that mech chassis was, or that mech variant was illegal.
Yes, those did end up being illegal, which is kind of a bummer. I think the we'll see next year. I think we might be ready for Total Warfare. Whatever, but we'll see. What do you think, Josh? You think the community is ready for Total Warfare?
I feel like, and this is like kind of getting ahead of myself, but I feel like the community barely knew what Elementals could do rules-wise.
I know.
I was like, even Elementals, like I fought two games with Elementals and both of those players got their Elemental rules wrong.
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
You don't
deserve this.
And that's my concern, but we'll see. We'll see.
But I think a lot of people know way more about Elementals now than they did beforehand.
That's true.
I think that it was a discussion point because I had a lot of people who were like, I had no idea how cool this unit was. Yeah. It's going to be part of my army going forward. And that's what I want, is I want people to get to know these things and learn how to use them. I mean, I had the rules packets there. I knew them backwards and forwards. I was there for anyone, whether you're playing against them or with them, to raise their hand.
So I could
answer the question because I could do it succinctly and immediately. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people learned a lot and they're like, these are really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't want to open the floodgates and just like release you can use any mech in any battle armor that's in Total Warfare.
That's different in Alpha Strike, because it's all just a little card they're all the same. They just have different numbers on them. But in Classic, they're so, so different.
Bro, why didn't you let me use my VTOL battle armor that take rules from the aerospace section of Total Warfare and the battle armor section of the infantry section of Total Warfare and run them and use the micro pulse lasers and the, you know, micro bomb launchers? Dustin is like he's head on the face, like, oh
yeah,
God,
we absolutely allowed that. Oh, that was totally a change like a week and a half before
we started. Totally. Yeah, we talked about it.
I don't believe you.
On the podcast. Yeah.
But yeah, so this was Battle Mech Manual mechs only. If the equipment was in Battle Mech Manual, it was legal. If it wasn't, the whole mech not legal at all. And regular Clan Invasion, aka a game, not a game marker, Clan Invasion box set Elementals. So just laser, machine gun, flamer Elementals.
I saw laser, I saw flamer. I did not see a single machine gun.
Yeah, Elemental. Nobody brought those MGs.
I don't want to say it's free heat estate, but but when no one's bringing conventional infantry, it's kind of a waste.
Yeah, the only reason would have been if you were like 2 points over and just switching to machine gun battle armor would have popped you underneath the 7,500 limit.
But yeah, that was my thinking for force composition this year. I've done Battle Mech Manual only. I really like, if the powers that be could give me Battle Mech Manual sort on Mega Mech Lab, I would be so happy, because I really like that. You can get the Battle Mech Manual and you can just play Battletech. I like that idea, but maybe next year we'll do Total Warfare. Well, we've talked about that for a while. So we've got the missions, we've got the lists. Are we ready to talk about the games?
Yeah,
I think so.
All right.
So how do we?
I didn't play any games, so that's a you, Josh.
Oh man, am I the only one that played for this event?
Nope.
I was about to say someone. Dustin was the ringer, so he did get to play. For my list, I decided to bring Greyhound because it was allowed as the like not Mech Bay podcast mech, but the regional local mech.
Yeah,
it would have been horrible if you did not bring a Greyhound. I would have been so
literally
sad.
Would have been horrible. I was like, oh man, I have so many list ideas, but the Greyhound like is it's a star shaped block that only fits a star shaped hole.
And I was like, yes.
A, half the variants aren't battle mech legal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh man, I have to take one. So I decided to take the TSM one because I fell in love with that. And I was like, dang, 24 point kicks feels real good.
Yes.
Yeah. And it has a claw. So you do an 18 point claw, which is also really good.
Really good.
Really good.
It's so stupid, but like, mech do a lot of damage. Josh likes it. This feels like a Dustin take, but you know what? Melee. Dustin likes the low point damage, high risk reward. Josh.
Yes. Yeah.
High damage, high risk, high reward.
Big
number make me feel good. So I took.
So you got your Greyhound.
I took my Greyhound. I took it at 4-4. I took a Legacy 05, and that is the two VSPs, two MML 7s with Artemis. I had that as a 4-4 pilot as well. I link that to a 4-5 OSCout 10CS, which is the Jump 10 OSCout with PPR medium lasers.
Nice.
At 4-5. I then took a 4-5 Night Sky 5S, which is a 6-9 large pulse, two medium pulse, one small pulse, and a hatchet Night Sky. And my last mech was the Exterminator 7X, the Wreck Guide Exterminator with stealth armor, four variable speed pulse lasers, an MRM-10, a laser AMS, and an ER small, and an XXL.
It burst into flame just by looking at it. You could have just painted
the screaming sun mech. Yeah.
And you know what? I love it even more now.
Yep. I think a lot of people at this tournament learned about VSPs. You get -3? Yes, sir.
At two hexes.
I had gone through a few variations of this list, and I actually played against you, Denham, with a different list of the Greyhound, the Legacy, with UAC 10s, the Gurkha, and a Toyama, essentially a C3I triangle, three mechs, and a Greyhound. I think what I determined in our practice game is more is better still, like even with C3I. Yeah,
five works for sure.
Five is a lot better than three. Or three with one non-C3I, I should say.
Yeah, because I had the Shadowhawk in that game with an ECM, and it just like shut your whole network down at all times. Yeah.
It was like, oh boy, I really love paying for C3I and not getting any of the benefits, says the person who just did a negative play experience episode.
Yeah, C3 is so easily hard countered.
I think there was actually someone else at the tournament that mentioned, like, how do you run C3 for this? And it's like, you don't do the whole unit as C3. You do like a pair.
One pair. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was on my list. And that was literally like a last minute change. Like, I literally threw in the OSCout and the Night Sky instead of Toyama without playtesting. And I was like, you know what? Having two extra mechs versus one is so much better.
Yeah. Well, and really, like, you took out the Toyama. And you put in two very mobile mechs, and that's what you and I had talked about, was mobility is just...
Actually, I guess you're right. I threw in three mechs compared to one, because the Toyama with C3I, and I traded it for Exterminator 7X, the OSCout, and the Night Sky.
Right.
So I traded one mech for three, which I think that just completely...
Yeah, when you were talking to me about your just now, because, I mean... Denim was checking lists. I didn't see your list. Or I saw your list, but I'm not familiar with the chassis. And I'm like, this sounds like a very dynamic skirmishy list that can punch. So like a strikery skirmishery.
Almost like my favorite kind of mechs from the Ill-Clan Red Guides.
I kind of took all these knowing that, A, I had seen the missions, and all of these were played on a battle mat, and they were all played the long edge against long edge. So we were all playing the shortest possible distance to meet each other.
Right.
Which is what? Gets 17 hexes at the most? 13? 14?
At the most. Yeah. Yep. Gets the game going fast.
Yeah. And I was like, I knew immediately. I was like, Dustin is terrified of turn one, only spent moving and then rolling shots that miss. He wants action.
As long as you had a mech that moved 9, it could get onto an objective on turn one.
Yeah. I played pre-COVID. Tournament playtesting, I tried the long ways, so you could, you know, maneuver and jockey the field as you came to each other. And I'm like, great, this wastes 15 minutes. I'm like, I don't have time for this. So you're coming in hot. You do get to deploy across the whole entire side.
Yeah, great for flanking.
But in any case,
so we want to get into my game. So do we want to talk about?
Yeah, let's dive in there.
And for my first game, I fought against Ian. And what did Ian take? Ian Colbert took an Annihilator 5W, which is the clan spec Annihilator with, what is that?
Right.
Four
Gauss rifles and four medium pulse lasers.
Four Gauss rifles. Oh my God. He took it at a 3-4 too. So that's almost 3,500 BB.
That was half of his
list. That's a lot of egg.
That's a lot of egg. He took a Griffin C, which is the 699.
It has a Streak LRM-10 with no minimum range and an ERPBC.
With also no minimum range because it's all clan spec. Right. Ugh.
Yep.
He took a Locust C, also with, you know, 8/12, but two ER smalls clan and one clan medium pulse.
Right.
Spicy.
And that's at 4/5. And then he took an Urbamech R68, and that is the MRM-30.
MRM-30.
This was a weird list to go against game one, which was the three objectives, and on turn three, one of them disappears. And I was like, okay, yeah. I'm fighting super jumpy boy, super fast boy, super tanky, murders you from any distance.
He was so happy that he won the Urban Mech prize pack that has the MRM variant in it.
Oh, he did.
I get to have the one that I used.
That's excellent.
Yeah. But how did the game go?
Oh, yeah, how'd it go?
He won initiative, and I think he deployed like his Annihilator first. And I was like, okay, turn, or, you know, my first one was my Exterminator 7X activating stealth armor and going on to the farthest objective. I was like, okay. And then he was like, all right, Urban Mech comes out. And I was like, okay, he's deploying his slow guys first. This is great. And I'm like, okay, Night Sky moves 9, and it's 9 spaces the objective. That's perfect. So I put that on. And I was like, okay, so he's going to get the second, or he's going to get the third objective with either the Locust or the Griffin.
Right, great, because the Griffin jumps 9.
Yeah. And he does not go for the objective. And I was like, oh, this is bait. This is total bait. So I'm like, but I can't not put a mech on the objective, knowing that there's no like score limit. It's like I can literally score 3 objectives turn 1. So I throw my Osk out, or which jumps 10, so I get TMM of 5. Look, if you hit me with a Gauss rifle, that's fine, but I'm getting on objective turn 1. So I get on all 3 objectives, then he comes out and he puts his Locust next to my Night Sky and his Griffin next to my Osk out, and I was like, okay, but I'm on 3 objectives if you want to try. And the beginning of that game was really, I have these objectives and I'm not giving them up for anything at all, ever. You're going to have to come and take them. And once he realized that he couldn't really take the objectives, he kind of focused on trying to get back shots on my Legacy, which had deployed roughly on the same like column as the Oscout to use at C3I. And he got into my back armor. Like, there was not any back armor left. ERPBC hit, LRM streak, LRM-10 hit. And there was just nothing. Like, he was just fishing for crits then. And I was like, thankfully, that was the most tanky Legacy I could find. Compact engine.
Got some armor.
Compact engine. So it's like, even if you blow off a side torso, there's nothing in there. There's no ammo in the left torso. There's only 2 tons in the right. It's got case. Like, you literally have to.
Got my zombie. Yeah.
You have a zombie. And I was like, but I also had a VSPs in both arms. So he would jump behind me and I'd be like, okay, I torso twist, get one arm behind, and I'd do 9 points. So I'm like, okay. While he was like focusing on my tanky stuff, my other guys are just racking up objectives. It was like mid game that he kind of determined, like, oh, the Night Sky can't move between one objective and another to get on the objective. Also, here's where losing initiative is great, because you get to move first, which means you get to move onto objectives before your opponent. And I was like, great, I move off. Is he going to put his Urban Mech on the objective and get nuked? No. So I put my next mech. So I was like, scored 3, scored 2, scored 3. Like, I was essentially alternating.
Yeah.
He finally put his Annihilator from like the top of the hill onto like a level 1 with the level 2 surrounding it. And that's when I TSM'd and supercharged my Greyhound for 14 hexes, ran it up, hit that like override engage button, ran it. And I was like, Night Sky's standing still, Greyhound's moving 14 hexes. And he's like, everybody's shooting at the Night Sky. I was like, Night Sky, you got one job. You tank shots. Greyhound, you got one job.
Put kill.
You kill. And the Night Sky took 5 Gauss rounds before it died.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Nice. No, it took like, it tanked. Like, it was not meant to be the tanky mech. It was meant to be the don't come close to me mech. But the Greyhound, I roll the kick, I hit, and I roll the location, and it's a 6. And I'm like, that's 24 points. And I'm on level 2, and you're on level 1.
Punch table time.
Punch table. Yep. So I do 24 points to the head, and I insta-kill the Annihilator.
So the Annihilator has that forward-mounted cockpit, too. So it didn't, like field goal it off there. It just knocked it right through the engine out the back.
Crumpled through. Now, I wasn't aiming for the head. You can't do that. But I was like, the Annihilator does not have, like, significant armor. Like, it has 26 on the arm and 32 CT. And 24 on any of the LT and right T. So I'm like, if I do a 24-point kick, I'm getting internal. Like, it had already taken, like, scratch damage. Mm-hmm. And the head was just, like, piece de la resistance. Like, oh yeah, this game's in the bag now.
The level higher kicks are just like, you can't not take them.
Can't not. How can you resist? He put it there and I was like, it's like a shark smelling blood. Like, is that toast or is that food?
I will abandon all objectives this turn to kick you in the head.
Exactly. So Annihilator dies and I'm like, boom. And I kill the Locust with VSPs from the Legacy. The Night Sky, like I said, goes down to the weathering fire of his entire army for one turn. But after that, the Greyhound moves in, kills the Urban Mech because it can't move far enough to do anything. And by the time the game ends, his Griffin is just jumping around trying to get back shots, hoping to kill something. And I end that game 12-0 because he never wanted to risk it on an objective. And on turn one, I just committed everything, like bum rushing the objectives.
Nice. So yeah, you take round one with 12 victory points. And I'm looking at the sheet and I think the top four players of the tournament were the only players that scored double digits in the first mission. Yep. So a great mission to rack up some points on, because if you're ready to go to mission two, mission two is difficult to rack points up on.
Mission two.
It was the lowest scoring one across the board. And we had some people talking about that.
And it always was the lowest scoring. And
I'm pissed at this mission, man. I hate this mission. God.
I'm not saying this is a perfect mission.
Blink almighty, this mission's terrible.
So yeah. How was this game?
This mission was terrible. I played against David Corbin.
Yep.
And he is the last year's champ for the tournament, if I remember.
He was also the only one to also get 12 points on the first mission.
Yes. Oh, so I should interject here real quick and say, round one, people were organized in the order in which they signed up. I figured that was random enough. So mission two starts up and pairings start. So you top two in the tournament are playing top two and three and four, et cetera. So you immediately get paired up with David.
Now, David took a Kodiak 3, which is the double LB-20 variant. He is 4-4.
Double LB-20.
I know. Everyone does. He's got the Man of War / Gargoyle Prime 4-5. That's the bargain bin, two LB-5s, two SRM-6s.
It really is. But y'all on a budget special right there.
It really is. Yep. I was like, oh, I hate it so much. He's got a Piranha 3, which is the micro laser ones, ER micro lasers.
One of your faves.
I'm a machine gun fan, because if you're going to do it, you're gonna burst through some infantry.
Okay.
But that's a 4-5. And then he's got a Fire Falcon C that's somewhere in between a Piranha and not. It's got four machine guns and an SRM-6 and a medium pulse. It's kind of a jack of all trades Locust, I guess.
Okay.
It's 4-5. And he's got two elementals.
Nice.
And this mission, we set up three objectives each, and we write down which of our objectives is our home base. And when we reveal, we have to essentially capture the enemy's flag out of their base and take it back to ours. And while we have the flag, we can't shoot or anything. So literally Halo 1 Combat Evolved Blood Gulch rules.
Yes.
except then I can melee people. I can beat them with a flag, Dustin.
I think, look, in hindsight, I just let people shoot.
But yeah, so this one, I also lost initiative for most of the turns. I put my base on a level 3 in my left corner, and he put his in the middle, like, empty line, where there's no terrain on the battle map.
Yeah, interesting.
So this one, I determined that, A, I have an Oscout that jumps 10. So as long as I have... The two objectives can either be 10 apart, or they can be anywhere between under 20, and I either get a score every two turns or every four turns.
Okay, yeah.
So I was like, as long as I'm under 20 hexes, I will score two every two turns. Or every four
theoretically.
Turns. Theoretically.
Theoretically, yeah.
I'm also looking at him like, he has a lot of slow boys and very fast boys, and I have a nice mix. I only have one like purely dedicated slow boy.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, so if I'm going to put it on a level 3, he can't just run up onto it. I mean, he can get adjacent, but...
Yeah, but that's all you need is just to get adjacent. Like, you could pick it up from any of the 7 hexes.
But I've limited the hexes that he's most likely able to get into. So I can pretty easily determine where he's going to go.
Right.
So I kind of set up turn 1 to be a little bit more defensive. All my guys go defensively. And turn one, we actually don't do a lot of shots. The Legacy is on top of the level three hill, and it's doing what it does best. And it's just tanking shots.
Yeah, drawing fire.
And David's strategy, I don't want to be like, this person is exactly the kind of person that I was thinking about on the last episode of NPEs, which is he's just firing cluster and hoping to get lucky turn one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, absolutely. It's great. But we probably spent like 35 minutes on turn one just, all right, what do I need to hit? All right, I roll cluster. That's 20 hits. All right, let's roll. And I'm like, this isn't fun at all. Like,
I know, but I think it would be effective. How effective was it? Like I would have thought that would have been for a tournament type thing where it's not about feeling good. It's about winning. Like that's a legitimate strategy, is just throw grape shot and see how many tacks and headshots you can get.
It would have been great, but I also was like keeping track of the time, and we were getting like half the amount of turns in as the last one. So it's like he was more effective at doing stuff to my mechs, but he was half as effective as getting turns in.
Yeah.
So I was like, and he pretty early on realized he will never be able to score. Like, he needs six turns based on his
movement. So he's running denial.
Yeah. So it's like he had already lost the game. I think he realized that pretty early on. He's like, I cannot move, get onto the objective, and move back to my objective in the amount of time that he can, because A, mm-hmm. the turns were taking that long. We also determined that his dice literally weren't designed to roll in his dice box for his LB20s.
Yeah, if you're going to go with the dice box with the rattle box, you can't get the compact ones. They just don't have enough space. You need to, I know it doesn't fit in your bag well enough, but that's why I went with the size that I did, is because I can squish it in the bag, but it definitely has room to actually roll the dice. The dice have to be able to roll. Or you get tiny, yeah, you can get tiny dice.
You see these bad boys? That is like 2%.
Are those 4 millimeters?
Those are like 1 millimeter dice.
Those are too tiny. I want people to be able to see that from their side of the, yeah, I want them to be able to see it from their side of the table. So I want it to be legible, and I want it to actually roll. Micro dice aren't the solution in mind.
But once we determined that his dice box was ineffective for our game, just because like, hey man, like you're rolling and they're the same. And he was like, oh crap, I realize that now. And I was like, so we literally just went to the master unit list, like auto roller, like the game aids. Like, you literally just press LB20 and it does like to hit. And if you hit, then we move to the next, like to the right side of the screen. And it's like, all right, here's the cluster roll and here's all the locations. And I was like,
I didn't know this tool existed.
Oh yeah. Master unit list has some cute little, apps and stuff that you can use for that. It's nifty.
And I was like, hey, we're just going to use this for, because you've got like five SRM6s in this list and multiple LBs. And he was like, yeah, we'll just use this. And I was like, and after that, it went normal speed. So I was like, okay, great. But yeah, so turn one, I move up and like he hits like my legacy in the head once. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. We don't really do a lot of shooting. Turn two, his piranha gets up, not on my ejective, but it's right next to my legacy. And the fire falcon is right to the left torso side of my Greyhound. I'm like, ooh boy. Uh-huh. I move my exterminator, like, and I'm like, the 7X, it can't move a lot, but it can move enough. So I supercharge it, run it. It's rear torso of its piranha, and the Greyhound and the Legacy are like 2 hexes and 1 hexes away from his Fire Falcon. I was like, okay, I gotta kill Light Mechs today.
Yeah.
He had put his elementals on his objective, and I had sent my Oscout and my Night Sky to deal with that. And I was like, either the Oscout and the Night Sky die or they don't. Like, I can't do a lot about, you know, if I pass PSRs or anti-mech attacks. The exterminator hits all 4 VSPs into the rear right torso and left torso of the Pirata, and just murders it. And I was like, exterminator, you doing work with your -3 VSPs.
Yeah, because at that range, at 2 hexes, when they get the -3, they do 9 points of damage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're harder to hit with and do less damage the further they go out, but 2 is the sweet spot.
Yes.
Oh, it's so sweet.
And I was like, I took that exterminator because I was like, I need something to fight spiders, Oscouts, piranhas, and dashers. Like, literally those 4 types of mechs. And this was its first real, like, hey, kill something very fast. And it was like, on it, boss. Turn, single turn, piranha's dead. The piranha, I hit the gyro with the 2 legacies VSPs. And I was like, great, Fire Falcon's not dead, but it's, you know, on the ground. Next turn, it gets up, and the Greyhound just literally backs up and murders it. Cool. During this time, though, the Kodiak and the Gladiator have put another two head hits onto the Legacy. And on the third head hit, I pass out, and I fall down, and I do another fourth head hit, and I'm like, so much fun. I love this. All the fun.
But it's high. Hey, I used the tool, the game aid, and I rolled up one LB20 that hits. I rolled a 10 up to hit. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. 16 pellets hit, three head hits, and two chances for crits.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what they do. Yep. LB20s be... So me, of course, I'm like, ooh, let's sprinkle some tax.
Oh yeah.
Josh is like, thanks, I fucking hate you.
Yeah, if I'm not playing for happy feels like tournaments, I mean, yeah, the LB20s are absolutely fair game. LB20s and SRM6s all day long.
Mm.
For sure.
So that mech goes down.
Yeah. So the Legacy goes down on the objective, which means he can get into the two front hexes, but his two light mechs are dead. So he's got to send in the Kodiak and the Gladiator to kill. But at this point, he's realized he's not running back to his home base from my like left corner base with the objective. So my Oscat has gotten on and it's got an objective and it's now hopped 10 hexes away and it's doing the trigonometry. And it's like, all right, I can enter the like right side three adjacent hexes to my home base to score. And the night sky is now sitting on the objective, getting a second one.
Mm.
Yeah. And he's like, elementals, what are you doing? And it's like, they're dying, man. Actually, no, they're getting two tacks on my night sky. Ooh. They get two engine hits. And guess what? Night sky don't care. Night sky got plenty of heat sinks.
We good.
If it had been on the Exterminator, that would have been an entirely different thing.
Exterminator is trying to jump behind the Kodiak to get good shots on the rear. It does not. It still even pops the coolant pod. And it's like, bro, it's hot in here. Like, bro, wipe in the face. Tapping.
Seriously, not having a good time.
It's warm in this rhino, man. But yeah, the rest of that game, the Oscout jumps back. And he tries. He literally, like, on my phone, just taps the LB20 master unit list. He does not hit with any of the pellets on the Oscout. So it scores because it has to stay standing, stay prone, and passes PSRs. Because if it falls, the objective's broken.
Yes. Right.
So I scored one objective, which is worth 2 points. So I scored 2-0. Right. And that's when you guys called last turn. I was like, oh, the night sky needed one extra turn to get in. By the end of that, I was like, okay, I scored two. 2 points, and he killed none of my guys, and I killed his Fire Falcon and his Piranha. So on BV killed and objectives, I won. But at that point, I'm also like, did anyone else do better? And I'm like, yes, a couple people scored like four.
Yes.
Yeah. So editor's note here is about 40% of the game scored zero. The other 40% of the games scored like two. And then the rest was like three or four. And there was even a six. Somebody, let me check my spreadsheet. Yeah. Somebody made it off with three for a total of 6 points. Yeah.
Wow. So that was Metal Zarak, right?
Yeah. And this is, I feel like this is that famous Southern Assault mission where it's just so hard to do it. And then one person's like, yeah, man, I got off the board with the diplomat or whatever. And you're like, how? Somebody every year does it. And I'm just like, so I want people to score points in the missions. Yeah. And this is my least favorite mission from my own mission packet for sure.
Yeah. I think looking at them, like the average score for all of them is six, except for the second mission. So if we could tweak it so that we could make that one average six, I think it would be better. Yeah. Cause then all the missions are balanced equally or weighted equally. Though they need different lists to do them well.
Yeah.
I mean, Metal Zarak had that Centurion 9, which, you know, it's got the mask to go 7-11. Mm-hmm. Mask.
So this is Zach Torrance.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zach Torrance.
It's got TSM. So it goes from 6-9 to 7-11. And then he's got the Crab, which 5-8. And then he's got a Mongoose with the mask for 8-16. So yeah, one, he's on an objective.
Yep.
Most likely. Like I purposely put mine far away. I was like, I'm going to have an easier time getting one objective than he is going to have getting one. Yeah.
One of the parts of this mission that I do like more is the little bluff game you get to play in the beginning. Do you guys like that part?
Oh yeah, I do. I thought that was cool. Josh? I just think the scoring is weird.
Yeah. How do you like that part, Josh?
I liked it that I couldn't just give my opponent like, yeah, run up your two like clan assault mechs that won't die onto the deck. It's like, no, you're gonna have to go through woods, over hills, you know, to grandma's house and whatever.
And back.
Yeah.
That's true. I have a lot of medium super jumpy boys, so if it's further away, it actually helps me out in that sort of situation.
I saw everything from objectives that were like 10 hexes away from each other to corner to corner. So
I think it was 17 hexes between his objective and mine.
Okay.
Which not a lot of mechs can do that. Unless you had a pure jumpy dedicated objective grabber, which is what my Oscott was there for.
Locust that goes 28. That wouldn't be too bad.
No, that would.
Oh my gosh. Lord have mercy.
Yeah.
Really? There's a Locust that goes 28?
I just use it.
Is it Battle Mech Manual?
Stuff. Yeah.
Legal?
Yeah.
Mask and Supercharger and TSM. It threw all of them on one.
Oh my gosh.
I believe it's just mask.
It's like just so
just
fast.
Mask.
Okay. Yeah. Big engine, little guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No armor.
Yeah.
Want to see me go to
that's
that
like
route.
My 1218 Mercury 105.
Want to see me do it again?
Want to see me do it again? All right. So game two, everybody's least favorite, but you do score 2 points.
I do score two, which was I scored more than my opponent, which was all I wanted to do.
So now we come back into the list, put everybody's scores in. Top of the table, you guys got to do some shuffling because we have some rematches. Because I think, top of the tournament is still hanging out. I had to switch a couple people around that were in the middle. But with three games, it's not too hard to get everybody a fresh opponent. So
yeah.
That wasn't too bad. And so do you want to tell us about mission three?
Mission three was each of us had 6 objectives and they were essentially on our back on our deployment edge. And we had to protect our objectives while killing the opponent's objectives. And each of these had 75 health and, they're an immobile structure. So we just got to shoot them.
Yeah.
Problem is if you just kill your objectives, you get 1 point for killing an enemy objective and 1 point for keeping one of yours alive. So there's a chance you guys could go 6-6 and tie with just the BV difference, or you could really kill theirs first.
And there were a lot of people that went 6-6 or you 6-something, but there's a lot of sixes on this round.
Yeah. So game three, I'm playing Nick McCall and he's got a King Crab 001, which is the Comstar Clan Buster double Gauss rifle 1.
Okay.
He's got a Dasher H because there's only 2 types of Dashers, H's and P's.
There are H's and P's. That's all that H's came out.
What is the P? What is the P? Someone remind me.
The P is a micropulse. The H is the heavy, is small, heavy small lasers. Yeah.
It's where only 2. There's other kinds, I swear. P is for petite, heavy. H is for heavy. That's right. But these are both 3-4. So he's going heavy on the skill because that King Crab. It's about me 2,900 BV in a 7,500 tournament.
Yeah.
He's got a Spider 8X, which is the partial wing, 2 medium pulses, also at 3-4. Mm-hmm. He's got an Uller Prime.
I like that one.
A Kit Fox Uller Prime at 3-4. And then he's got 2 laser elementals.
So he's got the 6.
One's at 3-4, one's at 4-4. Yeah, he's got full 6.
Yeah.
I did not see a lot of 6s, I feel like. A lot of 4s and 5s.
There were a couple 6s, but not a lot, but certainly not none.
Yeah, if we didn't mention it, in the list building, you minimum 4 units, maximum 6 units. Yeah.
There were only 7 people that took 6 units.
So about a third. Actually, I guess that's plenty.
That's about a quarter. It's about almost exactly 25%.
Got my calculator open. It's exactly 25%. Okay. All right, Denim, your math is very correct.
And there were 11 that took 5.
Okay.
And I don't think anyone took less than 4. Nope.
Not allowed to.
Nobody.
You weren't allowed
to. Oh, that's right. Okay. That makes sense.
Four to six. So if it was higher than 0%, that means that I would have not.
Look, I would have taken Omega. Like that would have been perfectly acceptable. You've done it for a game. It should be allowed. Yeah. So this game, I want to say I lost initiative for the first couple turns. And when we were deploying, he chose his edge. I chose mine. We laid our objectives. And then he starts putting things out and he puts the king crab out first. And I was like, okay, I'll just put my legacy on the same like opposite alpine hill of yours with like the golf in between. That's fine. Legacy's tanky. If you put a Gauss rifle through the cockpit, that's fine. Don't even care anymore. He's already fallen asleep once and he puts the spider on the very far flank and the dasher on that same flank. And I was like, I'm putting the exterminator and the greyhound on that same flank. And I don't like a spider is hard to hit, but if I kill a dasher H, that's great.
Right. That's a big deal.
Yeah, so he puts the dasher has elementals on it and the Aller has elementals on it. And the Aller is like kind of in between the king crab and the dasher spider combo. Dasher's got a team of a 4, spider's got a 5. And I'm like, all right, exterminator. Exterminator runs up. Exterminator, go. Do what you do best. The exterminator fires 4 VSPs. It takes out both legs.
Whoa.
And both the right torso and the left torso.
Yeah, that's what happens. Yeah. I mean, they're 9 each.
They're 9. They slap.
VSPs go slaps on.
And at a -3, you're +4 or +5 PMM just doesn't matter anymore.
In the Ilclan era, there's some very fast boys, and VSPs are your answer to that.
Yeah, VSP plus targeting computer is just God.
I mean, this one doesn't have the targeting computer.
Right, but I'm just saying that it can get even better.
This was skill for running and still using VSPs against the dasher.
Gosh. Is VSP plus AES plus targeting computer how you get -5 in Battletech?
AES is not compatible with targeting computer or mask or like any of the other Miamer based stuff.
That was smart. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So -4 is the cap.
Yeah, you get 1 bonus.
Okay. All right.
So the dasher dies. The elementals that hop off are like there's only 3 of them left, essentially, after we did the roll. I was like, okay, I accept the Dasher H dying turn 1. And I felt like I kind of kicked the wind out of his sails, but the Dasher H kind of has to die. Like legally, I'm contractually obligated to kill dashers.
Psychological warfare.
Yeah. I could put damage on the buildings. Exactly. Like a lot.
And I was like, the spider can do 2 medium pulses and a kick. The dasher can do a lot more.
Yes.
Dasher dies, and I'm like, great. I spend another turn like trying to kill elementals. I only kill another, so then there's 2 elementals left. And I'm like, okay, exterminator, your job is done good enough. I don't want you spending another turn killing elementals.
Elementals take so long to kill, too. So long.
Greyhound tries to go after the spider, but even with its TSM and run of 14, it just can never catch a jumping 10 spider with a partial wing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm like, he tries shooting at the legacy in the rear. And I'm like, bro, people have been shooting to the rear of the legacy for the last 2 games.
I haven't even filled the armor bubbles back in. It just keeps coming off. Don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, so much armor.
It really is. It's like, if you're shooting at the legacy, I'm winning. And I spent 1 turn trying to like, can I get lucky on shooting the rear of the spider? And the answer was no. And I'm like, cool. Greyhound, do something else. So Greyhound goes to punish the Uller for being in the open and also being a TMM2 light mech.
Yeah, being a light. Yeah, when you said Uller, I was like, that is a tough mech to run. That's a finesse mech right there.
I've yet to see someone pilot an Uller to its full potential, and even I, using the C3I variant of the Uller, is like, bro, Uller's not great.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Uller's the budget pick for, I don't want a medium, but I also don't want a light.
Yeah. It's the, I'll play clan against your inner sphere unit, but I'm going to be really nice. I'll take the Uller.
Night Sky goes up turn 1. It's line of sight block. Turn 2, I shoot at the Uller. I get the ammo explosion on its LV-10 ammo. Oh, no. And I was like, oh, no. Nice.
No.
He survives. He stays standing.
Okay. Okay, so yeah.
By this time, like the Legacy and the King Crab are having a little duel. The Greyhound and Night Sky have decided to like, okay, well, we'll just like spend 1 turn fighting the King Crab, and the Spider and those 2 elementals are running towards their closest objectives. And I was like, that's fine. It's a light mech and 2 elementals. They cannot do that much damage. The Oscout and the Exterminator do, it's 2 ER mediums and a kick for 7, 19 points of damage. The Exterminator does 4 VSPs and a kick to a building, which is a lot more than that.
I was going to say, I think that if we were going over this again with the whole elementals, this might be one of those where if an elemental goes in the build, like elementals can enter the buildings, set demo charges, and then come out and the building is just destroyed just to make elementals more fun.
Yeah.
You say that, but I'm like...
Josh is like, I didn't take elementals. I don't like that rule.
Of course it doesn't. I think it would be fun. And it gives you a bigger chance to destroy elementals too, because you'll want to ferry them, you know, between buildings. And every time they get on a mech, if you destroy that mech, there's a, you know, a 2/3 chance that the elementals just disappear.
And unfortunately, I don't know why, but Nick never deployed his elementals. They only got off when the mechs got destroyed. I think he kept hoping he could get them closer. And I just like, nope, the Uller died in the middle of the field. Like in literally no man's land,
stranding them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, sorry, man. And Uller is not a good elemental delivery system. It's not, it's a support flight.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even keep them alive that much longer using them as extra armor.
But King Crab went down for a turn, and that's kind of when I took my chance to like run all my, like my Greyhound took an objective and literally in two turns did the 75 damage to kill it.
Well, because TSM, yeah.
Yeah, so 24 point kick, two turns, that's 48, and then it does have weapons outside of that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Night Sky, you know, did just enough that so the Oscout, after the Exterminator backed it up, could jump and do it another, you know, two ER mediums and a kick. So I was like, yeah, by the end, I had killed four objectives and lost one and kept five of mine, so... Killing four and saving five gave me 9 points, and he killed one objective and kept two of his alive. So he got three. And I think this was he had too many light mechs.
To defend well, yeah. I guess.
He
couldn't do enough damage either.
He was great at the getting to the objectives, but I was just so skilled at killing light mechs. Because, I mean, that's really all I had done for most of my games.
I'm looking for how his list did in the other missions because, he scored 4 points in the second mission. Yeah.
And he did well in the first one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Seven in the first, four in the second, three. Yeah. So his was pretty even all across the map. Like it was a good, does well in all missions, but does not excel at any of them.
Yeah,
he didn't have any blowout games. So in any case.
Yeah, so I take this one 9-3. And that's when, you know, end of game. I'm like, okay, I didn't lose any mechs game two, and I didn't lose any mechs game three. And game one, I had literally only lost the Night Sky. Then you tallied up, and I had the most victory points at 26.
It's weird how that works.
So, yeah, I guess I'll take over here and start talking about some trophies. So, Josh, you got 26 victory points. You take home first place tactician. David Corbin came in at 21 points, and he takes home second place. And then we had to tiebreaker. I had three players that had 19 victory points, so we had to tally up BV Destroyed to figure out who won third place, and that was Nick Ferguson.
Nice.
So congratulations to them. I'll go ahead and talk about Best Painted and Best Sportsman as well. So in first... with Best Painted was Andrew McGee. So it brought some beautiful mechs. And second, we had Ethan Harrop, or he told me how to say it right. And then I forgot. I'm sorry if you're listening.
Ethan.
And then in third place for Best Painted was Jeff Rank. So then we move on to Sportsman. Yep. Sportsman. So I had, this is a problem. I think this is an issue for Bobby as well. Everybody is so sportsmanly at BattleTech tournaments that it is hard to get people trophies
like
for it. It's
like a 28-way tie for first place in sportsmanship.
Yes. So I had to kind of make a TO decision and switch up the way that sportsmanship was scored. I said, all right, everybody, here's a slip of paper. Vote for your favorite sportsman in your games. You get one vote. And I was like, people have to make harder decisions. You can't just give everybody a 10 if you can only vote for one person. And I ended up with two players that had three votes. So they went to tiebreakers on BV. First place was Zach Torrance. And second place, my little crappy spreadsheet. Yeah, spreadsheet game. We'll talk about that in like 2 minutes. But my spreadsheet game was weak. First place was Ian Colbert.
Ian Colbert, and second was Zach Torrance. They're brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It was very cool because, you know, I guess they're just both nice people.
Brother-in-law, I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. They're still related. It counts.
They're legally brothers.
And then Kelly Caudill came in third place, best sportsman. Now, I said this during the tournament, and I'll say it here. I believe a good tournament is built on three pillars, which is sportsmanship, playing tactically, playing nice, and painting well. So I D3'd who would get you the first dibs on the loot, and what was it, sportsman?
Yeah.
And then it was tactician. Yep. And then it was painted. So everybody first place went in that order, then second place, and then third place. And then I started sending everybody else out to get in line for the loot. I had, thanks to our sponsors, Death Ray Designs, Fortress Games and Miniatures. So thanks, Rob, for sending in some he sent in most of the force packs. And Death Ray Designs sent us some of their awesome terrain. Yep.
Thank you, Justin.
Yes, thank you to Death Ray Designs. And of course, Hangar 18 printed up a ton of stuff. Lots of grab bag stuff. So all the tokens for the tournament were printed up by Hangar 18. They printed up a nice drop ship that holds.
Yeah, it's an actual mech holder. Like, it holds 12 mechs inside the drop ship that you can paint up. It was super cool.
During the tournament, during the first two games when I didn't have to play, I organized those all up, and I was able to get 28 prizes for 28 contestants.
Hangar 18 also had the tables that we all played at. So that was,
yes, nice of course,
volunteer they their hosted. For, yeah.
So yes, big thanks to our three sponsors. So we got everybody some super swaggy stuff, and that gets the numbers.
Nobody walked away empty handed.
Yep. And like I said, I'm a parrot. I steal everything. So I really, really liked the way that, Rob does his prizes. I was like, you know what? Nobody gets money. You just turn prize money into prizes, and then that's the way it works. So I stole that from him as well. Oh, it was circled back real quick to my ringer game. I had a great game. In my game, I ran my King Crab up to a Marauder 2, the not the clan one, the chunky inner sphere one.
Yeah, not the 2C, just the 2. Yeah.
And I, of course, forgot that they have jump jets. So he jumped behind me. I thought I was going to get some lovely rear shots, but instead he just ERPPC'd my head off. So that was fun. I really, as the TO, had to focus very hard on giving my opponent the respect of my attention for the game. I wanted to drift off and think about scoring and filling out my spreadsheet, but I was like, no, Dustin, you're ringing. Keep your head in the game and focus. So that's what I did. I will say for the next tournament, I cannot be the ringer. If I had to ring for the whole thing, it would have been a total disaster. I was like, okay, lesson learned. If like I said, 10 person tournament is a totally different animal than 28 person tournament. Based on my prior experience, I was like, yeah, this won't be bad. And I was like, no, this is like not a linear. This is an exponential amount of work with the people. So I'll keep that in mind for the next one. And then tiebreakers, I just wasn't as diligent with my tiebreakers. And this is turning into TO talks about hindsight on the tournament. So I'll just keep on going with that.
But that's why we're here. We're getting all three perspectives. Played in the tournament.
Right, exactly.
Ran the tournament.
Yeah, we need to know.
Answer the questions.
Yep. I had a couple of quirks with my spreadsheet. I was like, okay, I spent a ton of time on a lot of other things. And I did not spend a ton of time on my spreadsheet. And I was like, no, that needed to be prepared weeks in advance and thought about a lot as well. Like, I was working on trophies like 2 months out, didn't work on my spreadsheet 2 months out. That was a mistake. Luckily, I think if people had to wait around for probably 10 or probably more like 15 minutes
at
the
end of
the tournament.
It felt like an hour.
I know.
Yeah, it wasn't actually that long, but it was late and everyone was so here's
ready to go.
We'll get into the TO issues, but yeah, people were like, well, we would have liked the missions to have been half an hour longer. And I'd be like, you do realize that this wouldn't be 7 o'clock. This would be 8:30 right now. Mm-hmm. If each mission was half an hour longer, like it would be so much later at night.
But yeah, so people wanted longer. Some people wanted longer games. I think we would lose a lot of more casual players if we went for like a 14 hour tournament. That would be rough.
Yeah.
You'd have to up your game for it to be a completely different kind of event.
Yeah, I feel. Yeah,
this was a good one day casual.
Yeah, 2 hours, yeah. 2 hours, five, you know, 10 minutes ish was fine. Mm-hmm. Per match, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think everybody's always cooked game three. If you have the privilege of playing Southern Assault, you get to be extra cooked on game four, day one. but yeah, it didn't take too long. The anticipation was thick. It did take longer than I wanted it to break all the ties and make sure all of my... I also don't want people to win multiple trophies. So some people have to get nudged around. So you don't take first and second place in something. You just get the highest ranked trophy in whatever you score. So that took a little while. People were like, all right, the masses are clamoring. And I'm like, give me literally 20 seconds. I'm almost there. Got to read off the stuff and get everybody lined up. Yeah. I think were there any other kinks? When I got down in the trenches and I played my ringer game, I was like, I knew it was going to be cramped, but it was cramped.
Yeah.
Yeah. Three games on a table was tight.
There were only two games on the table you were playing on too.
Oh
yeah.
So even tighter. Yeah. I heard somebody in the tournament say, oh, I'm not in the middle. Thank God.
Yes.
This
is one of those things that maybe we should do this in the winter time because it did get a little bit warm. It was 97 degrees outside and there's that big glass window where it was getting warm at the end.
Game one was fine. Game two, you know, at game three, everybody was in their underwear. The cockpit, you know, was hot. Yep. We were slapping
literally,
the override button.
It's warm in this stone rhino.
If we added a table and cut four players, you could have two games per table.
I think that would be the best way. Like, unfortunately, you're limited by what event space you have. Like, you can't build walls for a tournament.
Yeah.
Without like completely changing venue, like going to a church or gymnasium or like Boy Scouts club, like something that is not a dedicated game space, which doesn't have the facilities to host games. Essentially, you are having to bring everything there. And that takes a lot more work. As someone who played in the trenches, like game one, I was in the overflow room, which was great because it was like, hey, I'm three to a long table, but there's no one behind me. So it's not as bad.
Yeah.
Game two, I'm like, oh, I'm on the edge. So I get to stand like in the walk space.
To the side. Yeah.
But game three, I was in the very back and I was in the middle and I was like, there ain't enough room here, man. I got.
And there was a worse seat than that one too, because it's the one that's in the middle of the tables in the middle.
Yeah,
middle
no,
the middle.
I was like, I still didn't have any of the worst seats. Like I had the best of all my situations.
No, I remember somebody was like, oh, there was this many games in the annex room, and I was like, yeah, but because of the way the first set of the, you know, the first round got lined up, I ended up with two empty games in the big room. And they're like, oh, so there's extra rooms in the annex. And I was like, or there's extra mats in the annex. And I was like, oh yeah, there's one. And they're like, oh great. And they like, didn't even ask. They picked up their stuff and went to the other and told their opponent like, oh, you know, we're on table 15. We're on mat 15. And they're like, no, we're not. And he's like, yes, we are. Yes, yes we're on table 15. And I was like, all right. So
Just go.
Another thing to think about.
He slipped me $20 on this way over there.
Yeah, there you go. What we haven't, I think I've rambled on enough about running and preparing for the tournament, but what we haven't heard from is the lore master, the judge in the trenches answering the questions. You were a busy boy.
Man. I was a busy person. There was always a hand raised somewhere in one of those two rooms. And if there wasn't, there should have been. Yeah.
So my question was like, A, I want to know how to play the tournament, how to run the tournament, but also B or C, what are like the common questions that kept coming up? Because this was a Battle Mech Manual tournament. Like there were no optional rules. This was just pure.
That's a question. Are there floating crits?
Right. That was a very common question.
And that was in the packet, right? Like that was in there, like no optional rules.
Yes. Right. It was no optional rules. But like I said at the beginning, not everybody has a copy of the Battle Mech Manual. And they're very used to playing with like their house rules, and they don't know which are house rules and which are not. So
right.
if it's house rules for 20 years, it just becomes the house.
Yeah. So a lot of the things are like, is this an optional rule? And I'll be like, that's not a rule at all. I don't know where you got that from.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I got one like, well, how many movement points does an engine hit take away? Like,
None.
No. I mean, when you take an engine hit, you know, and you get the 5 heat. And I had a lot of people ask that. I say a lot, like two.
When you take an engine,
wait, more than one?
Yeah, that's the thing.
No. That one, the engine hit taking movement points was just one. But speaking of engine hits,
if I had a nickel every time, I'd have two nickels.
but like. You know, questions like when does the heat from an engine hit apply? Does it apply after your heat sink gets rid of all the heat? And the answer is no, it happens before. Your heat sinks happen at the end. Like the that is the last thing that happens.
Cool. You just fired another 5 heat weapon. That's how you treat it.
For each engine hit, it's just another 5 heat weapon that's stuck in the on position.
Take 5 off the heat you sink permanently, add 5 heat at the end, doesn't matter, do the math. Yeah. You get 5
But a lot of people are like, oh, well, okay, well, if I'm cold this turn, and then at the end of the turn, then I have to add the heat, so I go up to 10. So I'm always at 10 heat. And that's not how it works. But there were multiple people who thought that was.
That's not how this works at all.
We had a couple of people, more than one, who are like, I've been doing streaks wrong this whole time. I thought you still had to roll on the cluster table for streaks.
Mm.
No, that's the beauty. That's why they weigh so much, is because they lock on. And
oh, I heard. Yeah, I heard somebody, because I was in the annex for the most part. I heard somebody is like, oh, okay, so your awesome fell over. You're going to take 5, 5, 5, and 3. And I was like, whoa, from across the room. I was like, so how much damage are we doing with this fall? It's like, oh, this much. And I'm like, no, it's divided by 10, rounded up. And they're like, really? And I'm like, oh, yes, really? And they're like, oh. If that's how it's done, and yes, sounds it. I was like, yeah, falls don't have to hurt that much. Oh my God. That's a lot of damage.
Hurt a little.
It's like, oh, I've always played, you know, 100 ton or falls. It takes 20 points. And I'm like, nah, man, that's 10 points in groups of 5, you know? So yeah, that was one for me.
I was playing a game with myself and I was like, I will only open up the Battle Mech Manual if I do not know 100% the answer to their question. And I only had to open the book 3 times. Mm-hmm. So I was very proud of myself.
What were those 3 questions?
Yeah. One was, cause you know, we're using elementals and there's only a few ways to get elementals off of you, especially if there's no water on the map.
Yeah.
The easiest way is, do you have jump jets? If you jump, then you do a PSR +4. And if you do that, then they all fall off and take some damage.
Interesting.
But we had objective-based gameplay on the first mission, and people are like, I don't want to get off the objective. Can I just jump in my hex, like straight up and down? And I said, you know what? I'm not 100% on that. I'm going to look it up. And the answer is, yes, you can do a zero hex jump. You're considered spending 1 movement point. You go up and you come back down.
And you get 1 TMM. Jump.
Yeah, 1 TMM. Huh.
Today I learned.
I guess that makes sense. Exactly. Because technically you could turn. Either walking or running, so why not? You could turn jumping, and even then you wouldn't. You could.
So at Urban Mech now, I will always jump to turn around because at least get I get 1 TMM, whereas normally I would not.
Yeah, I've never. That is a fun edge case right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I had to pause. I'm like, that doesn't sound like something that you shouldn't be able to do, but I don't think I've ever heard it. And it didn't take me long to find, which was nice. So yeah, that was one of the very few things that I just didn't have an answer for. Other ones were little ones, like somebody needed a 3 to hit on their autocannon, and they decided to, it was a rack, and they decided to open it up and fire all 6, and they rolled a 4, which jams the rack.
But it hits.
It does. It still fires all 6 rounds. They still roll on the 6th cluster. They still hit and do damage. They still do heat. And then it jams at the end of that. So yes, it does still fire. And if you roll, if your target number was low enough, they still hit.
And this works for UX too. If you need it two to hit.
Yeah, it does work for UX. If you need, that's why they specifically say in the book, if you need a two or lower to hit, you don't have to roll unless you're firing something that has that has a chance to jam. In which case, like an Ultra AC 20, if you need that two to hit, you still have to roll in case you get a two. Yes, still goes off. You still hit, but it jams at the end.
Bro, I paid for the Midron Excel UAC 10. I'm going to use the Midron Excel UAC 10
exactly.
In rapid fire mode.
So we had a lot of questions about, I have no way of getting this person off of these objectives for mission one. And I couldn't just go around telling people how to play the game.
Right, right.
But I was like, anybody who came up with an option, I would say, yes, you are correct. And yes, that does work. And yes, these are the rules for this. So people started learning about pushing because they knew charging, but charging isn't always like a great option.
No.
But pushing works really well, which came into play in the later matches because it was fun to watch in mission one when I taught people the rules to pushing, how many people for the very first time in later matches started getting pushed off the board. I know of at least four different people who got pushed off for the first time, and one of them got two mechs pushed off.
Oh no.
You had to learn that lesson twice.
Yeah. Oh, it got even worse. There was a wonderful game where someone in mission three, they brought their awesome right up to the edge so that they could turn their torso on one turn and turn their torso on another turn. So they were going to be able to blow up two different buildings. And they knew that you could get pushed off. So they moved their locust into the hex right in front of it so that someone couldn't get adjacent to their awesome. And his opponent brought his Phoenix Hawk over and said, I am going to push your locust. And he's like, okay. I'm like, all right, he needs a 9, and he rolled a 9. And I'm like, and now your locust pushes into your awesome, which will then get displaced through the domino effect rules. Yep. And he's like, a locust is too light. A locust can't move an awesome. An awesome's too heavy. And I said, that's unfortunately not how it works. And he's like, can I dodge? I'm like, well, you can dodge forward or backwards. And since you're facing that direction, you can't go backwards because your locust is there. And if you go forward, you do a piloting roll. And that determines if you fall over or not, not if you get displaced. You're getting displaced. Period. So the piloting roll is, are you going to be prone off the board or standing off the board? But either way, your awesome is off the board. And so we had one of the first
domino
to mech destructions that I've actually seen.
Nice.
And that was a lot of fun. So those were basically the three things I had to look. I had to look up the exact specifics about dodging with a domino. Mm-hmm. I had to look up if an autocannon, rapid fire autocannon, fires before or after jams. And I had to look up if you could jump in your hex for a zero hex jump. So those were the three I had to look up. Everything else, all the other questions, I knew front and back. So I was good with that. We did learn a lot about DFAs though, because that was another thing is someone's like, well, I want to DFA him, but if I fail, I'm just going to get blown out of the sky. And I said, if you fail or succeed, your target mech, the target mech is going to move. Either they move into a hex adjacent, or they get pushed backwards away from you. But either way, you are pushing them off of the objective. Like, that gets them off. It may not be a place that you can land, because if you don't land, if you're prone, you don't get points in your
right, target. Right.
So it's either robbing someone of an objective point or
getting you one
instead of them. But either way, as long as you DFA someone, they're moving. They cannot stay in the hex. The target of a DFA never remains in that hex. Even if you get blown up, your mech falls in the hex that it was going to land in, and the target gets to choose which adjacent hex it moves to. Someone did that, and he got to choose which hex that his mech moved into. So he moved into a hex that had one of the opponents, and they were up on a hill trying to move enough to domino to fall off. But you don't fall down unless you change two levels, not one level. But it was still fun watching that play. So
a lot of chain reactions.
So if you've got a mech that like jumps 9 and has good leg armor, in that first mission, there's no reason not to just attempt a DFA, because you're at least denying them an objective point.
Did Andrew McKee, yeah. the one person I know that had a Highlander, did he death from above?
I do not know.
Or did he just because did he just well, win his
he first, already knew the rules
so, painted so and just walk away?
Yeah. Who knows? He didn't ask me any rules because he knows the rules really well. So, but I answered a lot of questions about elementals and some people who knew how to play them, some people who thought they knew how to play them, and some people who had never seen them before. And and it was eye-opening to quite a few people.
I mean, out of the statistics, there were 7 players that took elementals.
And so 25%.
So 25%. Would you say that like each of those persons or persons they were playing against had to ask a question? Like for every elemental, was there a question?
No, there was not as many elemental questions as I thought I was going to get.
Okay.
And a lot of them were just about where do I roll for the, you know, if they get swarmed, you know, do I roll on the full body table? And the answer is no, it's in that packet. And it's actually on the sheet, on your elemental sheet. Yeah. Like here it is. And I'd circle it. Things like how much damage does the leg attack do just because they didn't know where to look that up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, it's 4. And if you hit, you do 4 damage to a leg and a possible crit. Like that's the.
Both the questions I encountered were like either just heat of the moment or I'm so focused on either the mission or anything that I'm not paying attention. Like in a regular pickup game, I would know what to do, but I'm not rolling cluster for the amount of small lasers that fire, or I'm not rolling damage for there's an elemental riding and that location took damage.
That location, yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I was so busy. Cause at the beginning I said, look, I am here to answer these questions. I will answer the question for you faster than, you know, you looking it up. Just ask the question, even if your opponent is absolutely positive that they know the answer, it's just going to be faster and keep the game moving. If you just raise your hand, I'll give you an answer. That way it's my judgment call, not player versus player. And they did that and they took advantage of that. And I think it worked out really, really well. Nobody seemed unhappy with any of the decisions that I ruled on.
That's good.
And if you were upset, then write in and send your hate mail to us.
Do we want a little bit of statistics for the tournament? Yeah. So, Dustin, how many persons were there at the tournament?
There, we had 28 people show up.
Oh, 28 players, yeah.
28 players showed up. I think we had 36 people sign up. And we had a couple of drops and a couple of no-shows. So we ended up at 28.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great. I hear that's the largest recent classic Battletech tournament, at least on the East Coast.
In known memory, yeah. I mean, for real, like not even joking.
So yeah, I'm glad.
You beat out Adepticon, I'll put it that way.
Okay, I'll take that, I guess. You got a spread on how heavy mechs were?
You took the name, essentially redacted all the controlled unclassified information, and I you know, there was a lot of information, and I was like, what can I glean from everyone's list? And I was like, okay, I can glean out of all the list, which there was one list that you had to approve like day of Didim, so we don't really have that one,
right? We don't have all of the lists.
We have 27 out of the 28, and I'm gonna go with that's acceptable.
Yeah, pretty good.
But so there were 133 units out of those 27. There were 20 assaults taken. That's actually more than I would have thought for a 7,500 list, because that's almost like one per person.
Yeah, but some were banshees, and those don't count.
You know. Yeah, that's true. 26 heavies. That makes more sense, but also is a little less than I would expect as well. 42 mediums. That sounds. Yeah. That's everyone's like that sounds right.
I am so happy to see that with missions. Light and medium mechs are possible.
Yeah, there were 35 light mechs taken. I don't want to do the most of those were spiders and dashers, but I mean,
but they're the light mechs that do the work.
They're the stars of the show, best in their role.
There were 10 elementals taken out of 7 players.
Okay,
and most of those were doubling up on elementals if they could.
Mm-hmm.
4 players that took all clan, and there were 33. Units total of clan. So there were 4 players.
Less than I thought.
Yeah. So it was.
Yeah.
Clan are expensive.
They are.
15,
they
really 15 are. Players took all InnerSphere with InnerSphere technology, and 4 players took all Clan with Clan technology.
I don't think, remembering the lists, that anybody took completely 3025 tech. I know there was some that had almost all of them were 3025 tech, but not. I don't think any of them were strictly 3025.
I mean, okay. I thought about it. That proliferation pack looked so good. It's like, yeah, I'll take a Royal Mackie. It's a name variant, but not like named after a person. It's legal, right? Right?
Probably not.
I think it is. I don't know. I would argue it is. Okay. I would argue it is.
Yeah.
It's the original named variant. It's the Royal.
I'd have to take a look at the rest of the list and decide.
Exactly.
But, you know, like, maybe.
But yeah, so 33 clan units and 92 IS and eight units were InnerSphere with clan tech. Mm-hmm. So not a significant amount, which I think was mainly like rec guides. Like I think there were Ian, who I fought, took, you know, a clan tech annihilator, Griffin, and Locust. So
yeah, he had a lot of them.
So that is, you know, 3 out of the 8 right there.
The C's.
Yeah, the C variants, or just...
No Hunchback C's?
No Hunchback C's that I remember. Ah,
Hunchback C is nice.
My Hunchback model was being borrowed, so I couldn't run my Hunchback C in my list, my ringer list.
I know some of the lists that were submitted had a Hunchback 2C, but I don't know if it made their final cut.
Like I said, just based on that, like, you know, 4 players bringing all clan to 15 all IS, and then 8 taking a mix, like that... That's roughly the statistics we've kind of seen for other events.
I also, like Dustin, super happy to see how many mediums were out there. They were getting the love. And well, I think it's also because it was an Ill Clan rec guide, like legal tournament. And there is just so many good medium mechs in there. So many good ones.
Yeah.
Y'all can't see it, but I'm going like, very Jeff, nice. Jeff very pissed, nice yeah. medium mechs. Yes, they're very nice.
Mediums and lights. Like mediums taking first, I'm like, that seems reasonable for like points PV efficiency, but lights coming in second, that's a little surprising. But none of these missions were kill weighted. Like you could kill 10 mechs and it didn't matter. It's like on objectives, and light mechs do great at that. So I don't want to say the big takeaway is you can run a tournament without any PV killing. You just use it as like tiebreaker, but it seemed to work
that's
out.
That's what we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love mission-based tournaments for sure. You've won me over for 100%.
Ooh.
You would just change mission 2 to be something where it's not just...
Just tweak the scoring. I would change... Yeah, tweak mission 2. I'm not even saying that mission 2 is a bad mission. I'm saying that it needs to be tweaked.
You can grab an objective and instead of you can't shoot, you can't physical. Like, yeah.
Let's try it with shooting added in there and see how that changes the dynamic. Play around with how many points you get per capture. There's a bunch of things we could do.
Or even having more than one base. I think that would really break things up.
I think 2 bases that could be fun because then you have to split your forces and really think, do I all commit in on this one side or not?
Yeah. Yeah, because if you have like a giant thing with pulse lasers and you slap it on your base, like... It's even with the light guys, it's hard.
Yeah, except my legacy takes 4 head hits and, you know, pilot goes sleep. But no, Dustin, you did a great job running. Denim, you did a great TOing.
And you did a great job playing.
You did an okay job. I mean, I'd like to say someone did better, but I couldn't find them.
Look, I only lost 1 mech in a losing mechs doesn't matter tournament.
Well, that makes me feel good, too. So that, you know, if losing mechs doesn't matter, then there wasn't a lot of people focused on killing other people's mechs. They were really just trying to figure out the objective. And I like that.
Yeah. All right. So thanks, everybody, for coming out. Made my day. I'm glad things went smoothly. Thanks to our sponsors, Fortress Games and Miniatures, Death Ray Designs, and Hangar 18 Hobbies for hosting and providing extra prize support. Remember to send your hate mail to themechbaypodcast@gmail.com. And you can always hit us up and talk shop and stay away from Hangar 2 at our Discord. You can search us up through all the various search engines and find our Discord. How do you find our Discord, Josh?
In the show notes of every episode, if you're listening,
that's just what it
click
is.
More. at more, like show description. It should be like the first link.
Show notes. Come to our Discord.
Fight your friend.
We have pizza.
Yeah.